Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend's edition. Also your hosts on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. We release daily editorials covering the markets, covering the day-to-day moves in metals and markets. So please be sure to check out our podcast and website. And as always, keep in touch with Shad and I through email. On this weekend show, look, we're going to be covering the metals and the markets again, very much in the same theme that we've been talking about for this whole year, which is bear market action. We're kicking off the show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, we talk to you about every month, and quite frankly, last month we went through a bit of a rebound in the U.S. equity markets. That rebound was very well called by a lot of technicians simply because of how oversold markets had gotten, but now we're seeing another rollover, and again, it seems like that recent rally, nothing more than a dead cat bounce or bear market rally. Jesse, in your eyes, big picture for the financial markets, has anything changed over the last month that either gets you more bearish, more bullish, or really any changes?
Well, I think it's, technicals have been really helpful in trading the markets this year, simply because I think it's important to distinguish between the sentiment cycle and the macro cycle, right? The sentiment cycle is much shorter than the macro cycle. Macro cycle, I'm talking about earnings and fundamentals and things that drive stock prices over a longer period of time. And sentiment, you know, creates these much shorter term swings. And so back in, you know, June, we did see sentiment get really extreme. Markets got oversold, and the fundamentals hadn't, you know, deteriorated enough to really, at that point, to justify, you know, the decline in prices. So we've seen this very strong rally. We've seen, you know, it's been a low liquidity environment over the summer, and there's been a massive short position that was built up in the stock market. Whether you're talking about in the futures markets, S&P futures, you know, are literally record net short position there. And then in leveraged ETFs, you saw leveraged short ETF assets just explode into June. And so, yeah, all the pieces were in place for a short squeeze, which we saw into, middle of this month. But at some point, and I think this is what's happening now, is the markets are starting to realize, wait, the Fed can't allow financial conditions to ease right now. And that's what rising stock prices represent, is the easing of financial conditions. And with inflation so high, the Fed has to push back against that. The same time, we're seeing the macros continue to deteriorate, the fundamentals. So earnings, the earnings picture is analysts are having to consistently lower earnings estimates. And they're going to be continuing to do that because of, these macro fundamentals, right? I think we've talked about it before. When you see a rise in the dollar, rising interest rates, rising oil prices, it always leads to recession. We've seen those three things rise dramatically over the last 2 years. Recession is coming, and an earnings recession is probably coming in the next few quarters. And that's what the market, this next phase of the bear market is going to be about, is pricing in the earnings recession to come.
Well, Jesse, let's expand on that a little bit. I know you've written a few times in some of your pieces about the coming earnings recession, and it seems like there's a tale of two different markets. When you watch mainstream financial media, they tell you that everything's fine, consumer confidence numbers are higher, we've got good jobs report, we can't have a recession if there's good jobs numbers, and two quarters of negative GDP doesn't count anymore for a recession. And then you look at a lot of other data, like in the housing market or other metrics in the labor markets, or you look at other metrics as far as household debt skyrocketing, people living off credit, and it doesn't seem like a rosy picture. Is your thesis that when we start seeing some of these companies report their earnings and people finally have the light bulb go on that we're in an earnings recession, is that when we really see the next leg down in this bear market?
Yeah, I think it's companies have been able to essentially arbitrage. They've been able to raise prices faster than their costs have been rising. And that's enabled profit margins to do, you know, really well, go to essentially record highs. We haven't seen corporate profit margins as high as they are today in decades, if ever. Like, companies have never been so profitable. But now we're seeing labor costs start to really take off. That's companies, you know, biggest expense is labor. And at the same time, you're starting to see pushback where consumers are saying, wait a second, we can't spend, at least on these discretionary things, as much as we would like. And if you're going to continue to raise prices, then we're going to start, you know, substituting or looking for bargains at, you know, different off-brand labels and whatnot. So I think that, you know, that's the shift that we're seeing is in the early on, the beginning of the inflation push. It actually was a boon to companies because they could raise prices faster than their costs. Now, probably what we're going to see over the next 12 months is costs rising faster than the top line. And that's where you see this compression in profit margins and a significant decline in profits. And if you see that, then, you know, the PE ratio, which is, you know, something I wrote about recently, is going to look very depressed today. It's 18 times or something, you know, forward earnings, but that's based on those forward earnings. If those forward earnings decline dramatically, it's going to, and it looks like the earnings have been inflated over the past, you know, year or two in an unsustainable way, then, you know, it could turn out the PE ratio is 25, 35 today, not 18. And if it's 35 today and it really should be 15, you know, you need a big decline in the P, the price, you know, of the stocks to make up for that decline in the E.
So, Jesse, does this make up on the downside for the stocks to catch up to the earnings recession? Does it happen quickly or does this continue to be more of this orderly stair-stepping bear market down?
Well, I think, you know, for those of us who have been trading markets, who have actually traded a bear market before, which, you know, feels like, you know, we're a small percentage of the population these days. You look back, I've traded through the 2008 bear market and the 2001-2 bear market before that, and through some corrections in the 90s and things. Most people look back to 2008, if they look back at all. And 2008 was a crash. Yes, it was a bear market, but it was really a crash. You know, it happened it was kind of in a compressed period of time when there was obviously a financial crisis, which created that crash in prices. I think what we're seeing now is more of a kind of a traditional bear market, where you don't necessarily have a crash in prices in a compressed period of time, but you have a shift in fundamentals, where fundamentals are deteriorating and prices need to catch up to that or reflect that. And so I do think it's probably going to be more of a drawn out thing, like 2000 to 2002, 3, or probably more apt comparison is that 73, 74 bear market, when inflation was a problem and the Fed was forced to tighten, even though they didn't tighten enough. And we saw a pretty painful recession. And so, you know, we are, I think, entering phase two of this bear market. I don't think it's going to look like a crash, but I do think we probably, you know, based on previous bear markets, it wouldn't be out of the ordinary at all to see another 20% decline into the end of the year.
Well, Jesse, in lieu of that, a lot of people are looking at where they can find shelter from the storm. And traditionally, bonds was a place people went, but we've seen the bond market roll over the last 2 years and yields scream higher in the 10-year, in the 30-year, in the 2-year. People have historically gone to gold, precious metals, as a safe haven, and it's done okay, but it really hasn't responded the way a lot of people thought. But the one area people have responded by going into is the U.S. dollar. The dollar has been ratcheting higher all year long. We hear predictions it's going to go up to 120 and test that level it hit in 2000, 2001 during that bear market. What's your outlook on the dollar, and why is everybody piling into just the greenback?
Well, one of my favorite things to look at, you know, for the dollar or really anything is sentiment. And my friend Peter Atwater likes to say media reflects mood. And so when you hear all this talk about King Dollar and the dollar is soaring and, you know, all these things and it's dominating the headlines like it was back at that July peak, we really did see an extreme in bullish sentiment. And it's kind of made a comeback here recently as it's the dollar index has risen to test that July high. But my mind and sentiment in the dollar is getting very, very close to an extreme. At the same time, I'm seeing technical signs that momentum in the dollar is waning. That's a sign that the trend is potentially getting close to exhaustion or reversal. And, you know, to me, really, the what is going on with the currency and with the precious metals is because, you know, because they're very closely related, is the dollar's pricing in. I mean, it's very clearly correlated to people's perception of Fed policy, right? Leading into the July Fed meeting, we saw the dollar rally hard. And then after the meeting, it kind of backed off. We saw the same thing running into Jackson Hole. Everybody anticipating the Fed was going to be super hawkish, dollar rallies. And since Jackson Hole, you know, dollar hasn't been able to break out to a new high above that July high. And, you know, I think the perception right now is the Fed is extremely hawkish, especially relative to their counterparts in Europe and Japan. And that's true, right? Bank of Japan is still extremely dovish. I mean, about as dovish as you could ever imagine. In the face of the first signs of rising inflation in a very long time in Japan, they're still pursuing yield curve control and et cetera, et cetera. The ECB is still pursuing very low interest rates and hasn't even started to catch up to where the Fed is at. So the disparity between monetary policies across the globe are really what's responsible for, I think, the dollar strength. If you see that disparity gap kind of close to any degree at all, and all that would require is a little bit less hawkishness on the Fed. They've already kind of hinted at that. I think that's one of the things that kind of put a lid on the dollar, is the Fed officials saying at some point we're going to have to slow the pace of rate hikes. You're not hearing that yet from the ECB. They're saying, you know, I mean, markets are now pricing in 75 basis points rate hike by the ECB. And if you see increased hawkishness at the ECB and, you know, less hawkishness at the Fed, that's when you're going to get a reversal in the dollar. But I think even more importantly, you know, it might be to watch the Bank of Japan. They're so dovish right now. Any backing away from that dovishness at all in the slightest could create a massive short squeeze in the yen. The short position in the yen is just massive right now. So it's really kind of a tinderbox, I think, you know, waiting to be lit.
So, Jesse, I do agree with you in the fact that the dollar has lost some momentum right at this about 109 level on the dollar index. However, there are some technicians that are saying this could just be building, waiting for the next pop higher up to that potentially 120 level. Are you discounting that move? Is there any chance in your eye that that still could happen?
Anything's possible, right? I wouldn't bet against it. I don't have any position in the dollar right now. But I do think that what's going to transpire over, you know, what's likely to transpire over the next several quarters is exactly what the Fed's telling us. Is the Fed is saying at some point we're going to have to slow the pace of rate hikes. We're probably going to get 75 basis points next month. And, you know, that's kind of what markets are discounting. But from that point on, right, the Fed's going to get us to 3%, you know, on Fed funds. And at the same time, we're going to get more economic data showing the economy slowing, showing earnings are starting to deteriorate. And the Fed's going to, you know, that'll probably be the last, you know, major rate hike we get. We might get 50 basis points or you know, 25 afterwards. But we're going to start getting closer to the end than the beginning. And that's where the dollar is going to have to start reflecting what's going on with the shift in monetary policy.
Well, Jesse, I'd be curious to get your outlook on the commodity sector, because the commodities are historically punished by a strong dollar since they're priced in dollars. And so we have seen a pullback in commodities, whether it's metals like copper and nickel and tin and zinc and iron, or the precious metals, as the dollar is ratcheted higher, a lot of times tick for tick. But if the dollar does roll over, one would think that'd be strong for the commodities. But if it's happening in a recession and a weakening economy, what would your outlook be for the commodity sector in that kind of a scenario?
Well, my friends at Gehring and Rosenzweig have done some fascinating work on this subject. During a secular commodity bull market, recession is not necessarily that bearish for commodities. I think this is another example where people look back to 2008 and they expect the stock market to crash because that's what happened in 2008. They look back and they expect oil price, gold price, you know, to crash, you know, like they did, you know, during the painful recession that was associated with the Great Recession and the Great Financial Crisis. I think we're probably, you know, in an environment where the economy is not going to crash. If you look at, you know, just how much cash consumers still have on their balance, they're still spending like crazy. Look at the numbers of, you know, credit card spend. It's up 11, 12% year over year. We're not seeing demand go away like you would see in a very painful recession. This recession that we're in is the opposite of, it's not a deflationary recession like we saw in 2008. We're in a stagflationary where nominal growth is going to remain relatively elevated, I think, just because there's so much cash floating around. But it's not going to keep pace with inflation. So we're in a stagflationary environment, which isn't bearish for commodities. Just the opposite. I think right now we're watching the oil price bottom out again here around $90. And it's going to start taking off because the releases from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve have been unprecedented, massive, biggest releases ever. And in the face of that, we've seen the oil price go sideways. Since February, March, the oil price has essentially just gone sideways in the face of the biggest release of the SPR in history. So that's going to come to an end here in another couple of months towards the end of October. No more releases. So then what, right? And we're already, I mean, here in at the Oregon coast, I have a diesel pickup truck. I'm trying to fill it up with gas. Three gas stations I go to are out of diesel. The fourth one I go to only lets me fill up half a tank. They're already rationing diesel here in my local market. So the price action we're seeing is so out of touch with the supply and demand reality right now, but that's going to change too. People are going to start to realize, wait, we're not going to have the SPR to save us anymore. They did this, you know, probably to help bring inflation down and for, you know, political purposes. But the oil price is bottoming, and it's going to, if it breaks, if it starts to move higher again, I'm almost afraid to think, you know, how high it could go. $160, $180 a barrel is not out of the realm of reality when you look at just the pure technical setup in oil right now.
Interesting. Okay, so an opportunity in oil in your eyes. What about any of the other commodities, like base metals, anything else? Is there opportunities in those other sectors too in this potentially stagflationary environment?
I think, you know, one of the, and this is probably something I've been talking about for a while, but I do think people are going to realize at some point that this talk about the Fed being hawkish is, we're going to look back on it and realize it was really just silly, that the fact that they're at 2.5% or something today and inflation's 8.5%. Monetary policy is still so massively accommodative right now, while inflation is running hot. They're not in a position where they can do what Paul Volcker did. Almost anything you look at, the monetary tightening to easing ratio. Some fascinating thing I read about in the Financial Times today. In the last 40 years, it's been about 66%, meaning they've tightened, they've removed 66% of the easing. And every time they've tightened, 66% of the easing that preceded it over the last 40 years. So it's been a net easing for 40 years. During the 70s, that was the opposite. They had to tighten 150% of the previous easing, and still it didn't fix the inflation problem. So think about if the Fed had to undo 150% of the easing that they did in 2020. It's not possible. It's not possible for them to do that, and they haven't even begun to undo, you know, a small percentage of the easing that happened. So you would think that just common sense, you ease monetary policy, you get a huge inflation problem, rapidly undo that easing. Well, they haven't even begun to undo the easing that they did. So the inflation problem is here to stay. We're probably in a new era of inflation volatility. I'm not saying that inflation is going to just continue higher in a straight line. That's not how this works. You know, we could be watching a cyclical top in inflation, but it's not going to go back down sustainably below 2% anytime soon. We're going to see a number of peaks in inflation over the next several years. That argues for focusing your investments on real assets, on precious metals, commodities, real estate, et cetera, and avoiding financial assets. Because what that was the number one thing that benefited financial assets over the last 10 years was reduced volatility due to persistently low inflation that allowed monetary policy to do things that it wasn't able to do in the past. That era is over. And so I do think we are in an environment where you want to buy the dips in commodities, precious metals, et cetera. You know, and so we're going to look back at these dips now in precious metals, namely, and say this was a gift. This was a gift for people paying attention to what's going on in the macro environment.
Well, Jesse, let's talk a little bit more about the precious metals, because in light of what we're seeing, a stagflationary environment, persistently high inflation, the potential of moving into a recession or already in a recession, weakening economic growth, you're seeing geopolitical tensions, not just in Ukraine, but with Taiwan. You're seeing all the kind of what people would have imagined a few years back as it being a perfect storm for gold and to a lesser extent silver. And while they've held their own, they haven't performed as well as some imagined they would in this environment. What's your take on the precious metals market, I guess, short term and more medium to longer term?
Well, the precious metals reflect inflation expectations that are built into markets. To me, it's almost ridiculous. People look at things like break-evens, right? One-year break-evens right now are pricing in a reduction in inflation over the next 12 months back to whatever it is, 2.5%. That would be 600 basis points decline in headline inflation in a 12-month period. The only time that's ever happened, ever, is September of 1982. The Fed funds rate was 16% heading into that decline, and it fell to 10. Paul Volcker reduced it to 10% because inflation came down from 11 to 5%. But that's the only time inflation's ever fallen that fast in a 12-month period. So right now, the markets are pricing in a decline in inflation that's on par with the steepest decline in history, even with monetary policy only at 2.5 today, and quantitative tightening hasn't even gotten underway. So I think markets are extremely optimistic about the Fed's ability to rein in inflation right now. And that's what gold investors are pricing in, is wait, why do I want to fight the Fed? The Fed is going to bring inflation back under control, so don't fight the Fed, don't buy gold. To the extent that narrative starts to erode, gold prices are going to start to take off again. Right now, everybody has full confidence in the Fed's ability. If people start to lose confidence in the Fed's either their ability or willingness to bring inflation back down, then that's when you're going to start to see interest in gold really take off again. You're going to start to see ETF assets build again. And I think that time is coming.
All right, Jesse, we're going to wrap it up here. Always appreciate your comments. And look, hopefully for all the gold investors out there, hopefully it will come sooner rather than later. But I know a lot of the precious metals investors have been very disappointed in the action in the underlying metals and especially the stocks. But look, everything's been moving down. This has been a very unique year in terms of the bear market action because investors, quite frankly, haven't seen this kind of action for well over a decade. It's a very tough time for investors. We're just trying to make sense of it all, but we do always appreciate your comments. So Jesse, thanks again for taking the time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. We'll chat again next month.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.